Please be advised that this interview contains some language which may not be appropriate for all audiences.
We had just been airing for a little while, and I went into a Toys R Us here in LA. They don't have those anymore. And I went into a Toys R Us, and I saw that plushie, and I pulled the little string, and it spoke with my voice, and it was absolutely mind-blowing, and I did not buy that. And that's one of my biggest regrets, is not buying that, and also not buying about 100 of the Pop Funkos, because those are worth a lot of money now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another regular show Wiki interview. Today's guest is a voice actor who provided the voice of some various characters, such as Percy, Jebediah Townhouse, Donnie G, and a little-known character called Rigby. Everybody, please welcome William Salyers.
Hi, thank you. It's great to be here.
So we will start from the beginning. Before regular show, before anything, what was it that initially made you want to work as an actor? And how did you eventually get into the industry?
Well, I've been acting since I was 15. I started in high school, and I really love the sense of community. I love the sense of focus it gave me. I often feel like I'm a little scattered when I'm not working, but when I'm working, my mind kind of lasers up, and I really focus. I like that feeling. I like acting because it's a way for me to try on other skins that I'll never truly wear, you know? And so I've loved it my whole life, and I've done a whole lot of plays. I mean, I couldn't, if you threatened me, I couldn't tell you how many plays I've done. And then over the years, as I would do regional theater here, there, I would get a chance to do voiceover once in a while. And somebody would ask me to do a commercial for one of the board members. Or when I was doing a show in New York, I was asked by the producer. She said she had a friend who worked with a public television who was doing a documentary on the Great Bridges of New York, and asked if I could do a Swiss accent. And I could. So I got to voice the guy who designed the Verrazano Bridge. But all that time, and I say this to young people all the time, when I was younger, I thought, well, that's really fun, but that's not what I do. And so I never really pursued it. And now I tell people, be ready for success to look completely different than you thought it would. Because my first big gig in voiceover was doing Moral Oral for Adult Swim. And that really opened my eyes. And I realized that I really enjoyed it. That was kind of coupled with the fact that the on-camera work that I've been doing, the sporadic on-camera work I've been doing, I didn't find particularly gratifying, because I was never big enough to get interesting roles. I always played Objection, Your Honor, and 10cc Stat. So I found voiceover work to be very freeing. And once I saw that I could do it, and it was a good way to make a living, I tried to move aggressively towards it.
So how did all of that lead on to you working on regular show?
You know, I'm super proud, probably proudest, of booking regular show, because people have this idea that if you're an actor and you live in LA or New York, everybody gets to audition for everything, and then the best person gets it. And that's not how it works. What we do is very, very popular, and people want to do it a lot. And so it's almost unheard of to get a job like I was lucky enough to get with regular show without knowing someone. And it's one of the only times in my life, and the first time for a big gig like that, that I got a job and had no inside track. And I actually had to book the job twice, because I think because I wasn't anybody's buddy. You know, I wasn't anybody's inside friend. I didn't go to school with JG like Sam did or any of that. So I auditioned for it, was lucky enough to book the pilot. And then when the pilot was picked up and went to series, they put it out to auditions again. And they said, we don't need to hear you, because we've already seen what you can do. And then a few weeks later, they said, well, now we'd like to hear you again. So even though I'd played the part, I went in and auditioned again. And as I was driving back home from the studio in Burbank, I called my wife and I said, well, I can let it go now. I left it all on the table. I made the creator, J.G. Quintel, laugh. There's nothing else that I could do to win that role. So it's going to go one way or the other, and I'm okay with it. And actually, months went by after that. And finally, I got the call, and then I didn't sleep for 2 nights.
I mean, I don't know where I'd be in this moment right now if you hadn't got that role. Didn't Courtney originally audition for Rigby as well?
Yeah, she told me apparently, well, Courtney, that role went out to everybody. I mean, that's literally what she said. And now, obviously, she means everybody we know. But those characters went out to a lot of people. I mean, I auditioned for Sam's parts. I auditioned for Benson and Pops and all that. And, it was a given that Sam was going to play those roles because he had done them for JG and in grad school. And of course, Sam's brilliant at it. It's hard to imagine anybody else doing that. I was told that originally in the pitch, there was not even a character of Rigby in the original pitch. It was that they decided, I guess, that Mordecai needed a buddy, a foil to bounce things off of. And so they added the concept of Rigby. And I'm not naive enough to say I'm the only person who could do that role, but I am the very, very lucky person who got that role.
Something I wanted to show you that I've got. One of the amazingly crafted regular show plushies.
Ha ha! I love that.
Full string. You can't hear your voice, though, because I got this secondhand on eBay and the voice box is dead.
I have a story about that toy. We were we had just been airing for a little while, and I went into a Toys R Us here in L.A. They don't have those anymore. And I went into a Toys R Us, and I saw that plushie. And I pulled the little string and it spoke with my voice and it was absolutely mind blowing. And I did not buy that. And that's one of my biggest regrets, is not buying that. And also not buying about 100 of the Pop Funkos, because those are worth a lot of money now.
Every now and then, I just search up a regular show on eBay and I scroll through being like, is anything on offer? Because like I mentioned, I'm in the UK. We didn't get quite as much regular show merch over here. We got some, but whenever I saw something regular show related in the shop, I was like, I'm buying it. But so there's a bunch of stuff which I wasn't ever able to get. No, the Funkos are definitely a big one, because I remember seeing them in a store, but not buying them because my dad said they looked bad.
You say, well, so does the character.
So how would you define Rigby as a character, and what would you say inspired your performance the most?
Well, when he started, he was all ego and id. He's the guy that'll take the last piece of pizza without giving a second thought, obviously we saw him throw Mordecai under the bus more than a few times. He's not great with delayed gratification or forethought, which is how he ends up eating the omelet that almost killed him. He's, because of that, he's a heck of a lot of fun to play, because I try not to be those things in my real life. So it's kind of therapy when you get to be the guy that's just kind of spontaneously outrageous. It's really fun. But one of my favorite things about the character was that he actually changed over time. And you saw him become more responsible and more aware of people around him. And then you saw, of course, him become, for him, almost completely selfless when it came to Eileen. And so there was a really nice arc there to play. So I would describe him as a perpetual adolescent who eventually sees the value in growing up.
Of course. And to see Rigby grow as the series goes on is great. One of the best character developments of all time.
I agree. It certainly was super fun to play. I had a guy come up to me at a con recently, and he said that he had the greatest line. He said that he enjoyed watching regular show when he was younger, and he was a young adult at this time that we had the conversation. He said, growing up is realizing that Benson was right, which I just love.
And I mean, with Benson, I'd also say maybe joint with Rigby on one of the best character developments, because he's a bit of a dick at first. As time goes on, he's just like, no, they're pretty cool, but they still annoy the hell out of me.
Oh, yeah. Sam does that so well.
how would you sort of get into character then?
Well, at the time that I was doing the show, I had a teenage son. So I would just kind of think, what would he do? Because he was pretty insufferable at the time. And I remember, for instance, we had a script where Rigby gets called on something that he did. And his response is, sorry. And because I had a teenage son, I knew not to say sorry, but sorry, because, of course, it's not really sorry. It's F off. So, my son Ian was a big inspiration for me when I was doing Rigby. I mean, I would warm up my articulators a little bit, just sort of like work my lips and my jaw and my mouth, because, yeah, you know, it was a lot to say. And sometimes I had to say it very quickly. And of course, then it was the raps and stuff like that. But I didn't have to go too far to get to Rigby. I don't know if that's a compliment or something I should be concerned about.
Was your son a fan of the show?
He was determinedly unimpressed with it for a while. And then one day I went to pick him up at school. And he had his back to me, and he was, he's my stepson. So he calls me Bill. I'm a very lucky stepdad. He's a great kid and a great young man now. And he was at school talking to a bunch of kids with his back to me. And I walked up and he spun around and said, Bill, aren't you Rigby? And I was like, oh, I see what's going on here. So he always downplayed it to my face, but I think he used it for juice with his friends. Which is its own kind of compliment, you know.
It would have been interesting, because in the finale as well, Rigby has kids. So hopefully Rigby is the same kind of dad as you would have been.
Yeah, I mean, I think that once you, whether life surprises you with a child or you marry into one, I think that it really changes your perspective. And, you know, you have to care about something bigger than yourself, which is humbling and healthy, I think.
So obviously, like we've kind of mentioned already, Rigby is not the main character of Regular Show. He's kind of a double act between Mordecai and Rigby. So what was it like working with JG, especially with him being more than just a voice actor, but being the creator of the god of the whole show, if you like?
Well, this is going to sound like I'm blowing smoke, but it's true. JG is one of the nicest guys you'll ever want to meet. You know, I worked with him for 6 years on the series and the movie. I never once saw him lose his cool. I never once saw him be short or mean towards anyone. There was a period when we were doing the show at the same time as the feature film, because they didn't give us any extra time on that. We just had to do it when we could. And I could tell he was stressed because he was a little less chatty and he was a little bit quicker to run out of the room and go do other things, you know, but, he's genuinely a great guy.
Yeah. I don't think I've heard anyone say a bad word about him.
I don't know anybody. And, you know, I'm not playing Hollywood games or anything like that. I don't know anybody who has anything negative to say about him.
I remember I think it was San Diego Comic-Con 2014, both you and JG performed the Countries of the World rap together in sync. So did you guys have to work on keeping in sync all the time?
Oh yeah. I mean, we had to rehearse that, you know, we had to rehearse it for the record. And then we had to rehearse it to do it live. Yeah. I mean, I'd be so screwed if I had to do that right now. But it was something we worked on. You know, JG, the other thing that I love about JG, other than the fact that he's a really chill guy, is that he's kind of a perfectionist. And he was never going to let anything go out there that he felt wasn't worthy of the reputation of the show. So we worked on stuff like that, you know, and we had fun. We goofed around, but we made sure that we did the work.
Of course, another big name who he worked with regularly, ironically, on Regular Show was Mark Hamill. So yeah, what was it like working with Mark Hamill? Do you remember when you first met him?
Yeah, I do. I came into the studio And the director, Chris, was directing this guy in the booth. And it was a pretty big room. So there was a fair amount of space on both sides of the glass. And there was this older man. I say that now, there was this older man in there acting, and he was seated, but he was doing all this full body stuff. And, you know, he was doing this voice, you know, this very impressive voice. And, you know, I couldn't see him perfectly. I thought, oh, he's kind of familiar. Maybe I've done something with him before, you know. And he got finished, and Chris, the director, said, okay, Bill, you can go in. So I walked in, and I had some hot tea with me that I had put in a mug. And I walked in, and Mark greeted me. And when he greeted me, I thought, holy shit, that's Luke Skywalker. And but I was like, I'm going to be cool. I'm going to be really cool. I'm not going to like give it, you know, he's not going to see how mind blown I am. And so Mark, thing about Mark is he always likes to read when he's not actually doing takes. So he always had like a book or a newspaper or something with him. He was reading when he wasn't actively working. And he was looking down, reading a book. And I took a sip of this tea. And apparently I hadn't put the lid on tightly enough. And it just went cascading down my shirt. And of course, I was immediately embarrassed. And I glanced up, and Mark was still totally in his book. And I thought, oh, I got away with that. That's great. Like, he didn't even notice the stupid thing I just did. And then from his book, Mark goes, I've got a mug that does that. And from then on, I was actively chill around him because, you know, I started off by embarrassing myself. So why get nervous now? But the thing about Mark is it's like no one told him he's an icon. He is so approachable and so friendly. And not walking around with the chip on his shoulder, it's kind of stunning, actually.
It's always funny because every few years, like the Cartoon Network Instagram on May the 4th, they'll post like a video of Skips.
I love that.
And then there's always one person commenting, "Mark Hamill plays Skips."
As voice actors, we all love that. You know, Mark, in the voice community, Mark is famous for his Joker. Just terrifying. You know, we all knew that he did a whole bunch of different stuff, but yeah, it's always a kick when it blows somebody's mind. Or I was at the first Comic-Con where we all had events, but of course Mark was signing for Star Wars, and I wanted to get his autograph, but I didn't want to appear like I was trying to take advantage of our professional relationship, right? So I waited in line, and I brought my, at that time, I think it was like $300. It's more now, but I brought, you know, I was afraid to pay for it. And it was a long line, and I struck up a conversation with the person behind me, and they were like, "Are you a fan?" And I was, "Oh, well, you know, I work with Mark." And they immediately got really quiet. Like, he's crazy. So I didn't realize until later. I thought, what did I do to offend that person? You know, but I think they just thought that I was confabulating. But typical Mark story. So I got up to the line, and his operation is very slick. So they take your money long before you get to Mark. So I gave my money, and I got up there, and Mark was like, "What are you doing? What are you doing here?" I said, "I want your autograph." You know. And he said, "Oh, I'm not going to charge you." And he makes them give me back the money. And then he throws all the attention to me and says, "Hey, look, everybody, it's William Sires from Regular Show," which I doubt at that time meant much to anybody. So it's just the kind of classy guy that he is, because he's still with us. Yeah. It's just the kind of classy guy that he is. He's, yeah. Can't say enough good things.
I'd love to just get a signed picture of Skips. At one point, I know it would go for a lot, but one day I'll get there. That actually kind of leads me to saying this isn't the first time that we've interacted.
Oh!
I got a signed picture from you from one of the Streamily things from like years ago.
Thank you.
There was also another time that I've interacted with you, because I used to do videos on YouTube where I would compare the original version of Regular Show with the alternate lines that we get in the UK. And I messaged you on Twitter like 5 years ago being like, can you just like go through the process with me of how it works? Because I want more insight for it.
Yeah, that always fascinated me. International alts always fascinated me. The thing that I remember most about the international alts is the United Kingdom was mainly concerned with what they called imitatable behavior. So like we had an episode where Muscle Man put a cinder block on the gas pedal of a car and then jumped out of it, you know, so the car goes off and explodes. And we couldn't, that had to be clipped for the UK audience because it was imitatable behavior. And the other one I remember, and maybe you could clear this up because I don't remember which way it went, but in one market between the US and the UK, in one market, you could say idiot, but not moron. And in the other market, you could say moron, but not idiot.
That was in the UK. You couldn't say moron, but you could say idiot, which I never understood because like on Nickelodeon with SpongeBob, I remember they used to say moron all the time and that never got censored. Like there was a lot of strange things that were changed.
Yeah, well, the other thing about that is once you start doing it, you realize that it's a lot of it is very subjective. So it's whatever that, you know, it's here we call that department standards and practices. Like you can't, S&P will say no, you know. And one thing that I got a big kick out of when I was working on the show is S&P would frequently have problems with a suggestive line that we would say. And so they'd say, you have to change that line. And the writers were absolute geniuses at coming up with something that was different, but sounded worse. And so I'd be standing there going, wait, we can't say that, but we could say this. Like, well, they didn't say no. So, it really forced their hand in terms of creativity. It was really fun. And I finally got to meet the woman who headed that department at Turner. It's just fascinating to realize like, oh, they're like people who make these decisions, you know?
My favorite instance of a line having to be changed was it got to the point where saying that someone has died had to be changed to they've stopped being alive. And that just like, when I first heard that, oh no, they've stopped being alive, that just like absolutely killed me because I was like, that's so stupid.
Yeah, I felt the same way when I started hearing people on YouTube say unalived. I'm like, A, that's not a word, and B, it literally means the same thing as suicide. So why are we, I don't understand being coy about stuff like that, but that's just me. So I, what you got to, creators?
Kind of on the line of quotes, in a way, do you have a favorite Rigby quote?
Yeah, but it's not one of the sexy ones. It's not one, you know, it's not, if I had a nickel for every time I have said, stop talking or ham boning will save your life someday, I would be very wealthy indeed. But my favorite is not any of those. It comes from, there's an episode called The Format Wars, I think. And it's about which video media format is going to become ascendant. You know, and there's like VHS and Laserdisc and all that. And the guys swear their allegiance to one of the formats. And the old guy who is the secret leader of the format says, are you willing to do anything up to and including die for the glory of VHS? And Rigby goes, I don't know about die per se. That's my favorite. That's my favorite Rigby line. Because everything, you know, so much of what Rigby says was over the top that I really got a kick at it out of any time I could go low key. That was very funny to me. So that's my favorite.
My favorite line is probably from when they were in space and they were helping this crazy doctor get her husband back from this monster.
Oh, yeah.
And then later on, Rigby just says, no, this is more about getting those space creds. This is about helping that woman get back her husband. Or a brother or something. I don't know. I wasn't listening.
That's very Rigby. Yeah. Yeah. Another one of my faves is where in Exilent, where he says, They say, well, I think it's Mordecai says, you know you're allergic to eggs. Why did you do it? And Ruby says, I thought if I ate it fast enough, I wouldn't notice. My favorite episodes are the ones where he does something stupid and dies. And there's a surprisingly large number of those.
Every Halloween was a field trip.
Oh, yeah. I loved our Halloween episodes because, you know, they kind of took a page from The Simpsons and they just, it didn't matter. None of the show Bible stuff mattered. You could do whatever you wanted. You know, you could kill off characters and have them become evil and all that. And I got to, one of my favorite other voices besides Rigby was Creepy Doll. And I really enjoyed doing Creepy Doll in the Halloween episode. So that was a kick.
I'm going to draw on your page.
We'd always have regular show on the TV because Cartoon Network was like a mainstay channel in the house. And so there's so many lines that like me and my family can just quote randomly. If I just mention just the name Percy, they'll go like, I'm going to draw on your face. Another one is like, hello, governor. They say that all the time. But my mom jokes, of course. But I'm going to draw on your face is quite a big one.
I love that. You know, that's one of my favorite things I hear when I talk to fans at cons is they'll say that they watch the show with their family. Either you know, dad saying they watch it with their kids or kids say they watch it with their parents. I just get a big kick out of that.
We're going to slightly detour from regular show a little bit. So how did working on regular show differ from the other work that you've done?
Well, the biggest difference probably was that JG always wanted us in the booth together, if he could make that happen. It's very rare in VO of any kind, certainly in video games and often in animation, that you're all together in the same place. Because, of course, it can be recorded separately and then stitched together. But JG was of the opinion that there was something to be gained by having live people in a booth together. And boy, was he right, in my opinion. You know, there's a camaraderie that comes from being in a room with other funny people that really just ups the whole game. And so I did a play in Portland, Oregon, which is a few hours flight from where I live. And I went to Portland. And the traditional day off in theater here in the States, maybe true in England too, is Monday. And so my one day off was Monday. And every Monday I would fly back to LA and record regular show because he wanted me in the booth. And it was exhausting, but you could also really see the effects of it. You could tell that even to the degree of usually an engineer, if you've got shared lines, like, you know, when the two of us go, oh, or any of that, usually you do those separately because that gives them control over the mix. You know, they can't tease out, they can't separate it. I mean, they can put it together, but they can't separate it. So they'll generally record those tracks separately. But often we would record separately and then also do a together version and they would end up using that. And as we got to know each other really well, our timing became pretty good together. And so, that's one way that it was very different is that he tried to have us in the booth as much as possible. Now, that wasn't always possible with the guest stars because, you know, they had their own things going on or maybe they didn't want to be gawked at by nerds like me. So they, you know, they would sometimes record on their own, but I also got to meet some amazing people, you know, the late Ed Asner, bless his heart, and Donald Glover, and you just all of these really, really talented people who actually did want to show up and record with us. So, yeah, it was great.
Well, I would have loved to have seen, like, as like a Blu-ray or DVD extra, would have been just like, just for one episode, just like a raw recording session.
I kind of think, and I may be wrong, and I don't know at all, so this is just speculation. I kind of think our success took Cartoon Network by surprise, which is why merch was weird and spotty, and there's not more of that stuff out there for added content, DVD content, that kind of stuff. I just think they weren't prepared for how big it would get. Otherwise, they would have probably invested more in.
What you just mentioned then about DVD content as well was commentary track that you, JG, and Sam did for the episode where Mordecai sees Pops naked.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
Three of you in character watching the episode.
Are we funny?
I was like, oh, this isn't, because I went onto it expecting to hear about the episode, but then it was like a reaction, and it was like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, that's a very regular show, is it, to have us like comment but comment in character. Yeah, I now that I'd forgotten doing that, now it's kind of coming back to me, and I remember it being fun. And also a lot of pressure, because you feel like, well, I want to be on. I want to be good in the moment, you know?
Some other physical media things that I have, of things that you have been in.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Spider-Man for a moment.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
So the thing is about me, growing up, I wasn't really very much into, like, superheroes. I had watched the original, like, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films. And so I was, like, partially aware of things, but like the game was kind of my introduction to getting into it, even though the majority of people would have known that you were gonna be, like, from when your character first shows up, they would have known, oh yeah, no, this is gonna be one of the big main Spider-Man villains. I was there, like, when it happens, I was like, I didn't know this was a villain.
Oh, that's great. Well, that was something that Ryan Inderhar, the producer of the game, really, really wanted that. In fact, so much so that he had me delay my announcement, because we usually at some point are told, okay, you can talk about your participation in the game, right, and who you played. And so Yuri was doing that with Spider-Man, and everybody was talking, but they had specifically said, we'd prefer it if you didn't, Bill, because we don't want people to, first, we want people to be surprised that Otto is in the game. And second, we want them to think that maybe he won't be a bad guy.
I remember it was just like, though, while I was listening to your voice as it was going on, I was like, this is oddly familiar. I can't quite place my finger on where I've heard this before. My mind didn't go straight to Rigby, but it actually went to the future version of Rigby from the movie. And I was like, oh my God, it's William Sawyer's.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't. Wow, that's a great connection, because I know that we wanted future Rigby to be kind of a little bit more grounded and badass. And so I let my voice be a little bit lower and more gravelly for him. And yeah, that makes sense. Wow. Good catch.
And it was fun seeing you cameo in the Miles Morales game and then show up for something that looks exciting at the end of the second game.
The post-credit sequence. Spoiler alert if you haven't played the game. People ask me at cons all the time, so what is the, to quote the cutscene, the post-credit scene, what is the final chapter? And I'm like, dude, if you've seen that scene, you know as much as I do. Because they got in touch with my agents and said, hey, we have a scene we want him to do as Otto. And I came in and did that, and I got no extra background on that at all. So I mean, it hasn't even been, no one has said to me, we're definitely bringing you back for the next game, but I feel like they kind of have to now in some way or another, whether it's a cameo or a main role, I don't know, but fingers crossed, because that was a heck of a lot of fun. I did not know, you know, you talked about how when you started to play the game, it was your first experience with Spider-Man. Well, I knew about Spider-Man, of course, like you, I had seen the movie, and I didn't really keep up with it, because I also was not big time into superheroes when I was a kid. And when I auditioned for Doc Ock, they didn't tell me who I was auditioning for. So they wrote a fake scene. They had a fake name for the character. And I just played it as well as I could. And then a friend of mine who actually worked with Insomniac messaged me a few days later and said, dude, I can't believe you're Doc Ock. And I was like, what are you talking about? And then he let the cat out of the bag. And then I think it was the next day my agent called me. But yeah, I was so thrilled, because I'm a big fan of Alfred Molina's and his work in the film. I felt like I got better writing to deal with, because we had more time. So, the Raimi films, they got like 2 hours to keep 17-year-olds on the edge of their seats. So they're not doing a whole lot of deep character exploration. And I got to do a lot more of that, I thought, than Fred Molina did. And it was great.
I remember after the game, I was like, right, if they want to do this character again in the movies, they should bring Bill in too.
Yeah, I think I think Yuri was in one of those movies, the Spider-Verse movies. I think he voiced one of the as a guest. And I kind of hoped that they might do that with my Otto at some point. I really admire all the iterations I've seen of it. And when it's so funny to me when people say, when people want to compare Fred's work and my work, it kind of leaves out the fact that two completely different mediums, you know. So there's some similarity there. We were both on camera. It was both fully acted. There are people who IMDb makes me crazy because they refer to those performances as voice. And we did not voice those. We performed them fully. So there are some similarities there with film. But of course, it's a very different medium.
I'd love to see like a Spider-Man like live action TV show as well, that kind of follows a similar pattern. I love the game, but I don't want to talk too much about Spider-Man because this is a regular show interview. Have you got any, what are some of your favorite memories of working on the show?
That's a big question because there's so many of them. Anytime Mark would, this was not often, but when he would drift into the topic of his experiences making Star Wars, everything would grind to a halt and we would just listen. You know, we might be under the gun to like do a new script and then a whole bunch of pickups or whatever. But if Mark was in a mood to talk about that, we were all in the mood to listen. So that was really fun. And also we worked with a number of just very, very funny people like Roger Craig Smith, who played Thomas. And I like to say that if you set aside Rigby and Mordecai, Sam Marin was half of everybody else in the show, and Roger Craig Smith was everyone left over, which is an exaggeration, but not too much. He played so many characters in the show, and he was so funny, and Thomas was a great character, and he would just say some of the funniest stuff in the booth. There was our engineer at the time, a fellow by the name of Robert, who was very, very good at what he did. I think he's since retired, but he had a penchant for catching us saying something innocent in context, but then he would play it back to us isolated and it would sound really embarrassing. And you always knew not to piss off Robert because he had all that at his disposal. And one day we were recording and they were changing setups or something. And Roger was telling a story about an unfortunate choice of phrasing that a female friend of his used. We had just gotten the food chain Five Guys here in LA. And Roger said that one of his female friends had said, you know, that she enjoyed the food, but it didn't sit well in her stomach. And the way she chose to express that was, Five Guys in my mouth, great. Five Guys in my stomach, not so much. And Roger told that story. And as soon as he was done telling it, through the speakers comes Roger's voice going, Five Guys in my mouth, Five Guys in my mouth, Five Guys in my mouth. And that was Robert's doing. And of course, we all found that hilarious. I mean, it was a really fun job. It was a really fun job. And so just the doing of it was great. But then when you met people who were coming in as guests, and that there were people that I had been a huge fan of, people like George Takei, you know, and like I said, Donald Glover, it was mind blowing to realize what the show was becoming. It's a very isolated feeling when you're recording, even if you're recording with your cast, because it's a small group of people in a small space, and it doesn't take anywhere near the same amount of technicians that doing on-camera stuff does. So it's easy to forget that it's going out into the world and that literally millions of people are hearing it. And those moments when that would get reaffirmed were pretty amazing. Like I think it might've been at the same SDCC. At one of San Diego Comic-Cons, I showed up and there were gigantic Macy's Day Parade style balloons of Mordecai and Rigby. And it was just mind blowing to me. I was amazed.
I remember that Comic-Con very specifically, seeing the videos of it online, because I think that was the same year that they had like a walk-in experience like an arcade experience. And I remember seeing that on YouTube and being like, I need to go there. Little did I know, there was no way we were going to be able to get from the UK to San Diego in right. 2 days last minute.
You ever been to SD?
I've been to LA, but not San Diego now.
Okay. Yeah. It is really overwhelming. When I am at a show and someone says, oh, we have so many people this year and people can still walk around, I'm like, oh, that's hilarious. Because, I mean, at SDCC, you're shoulder to shoulder with people. You should experience it at some point. I'll say that because it is a very unique experience.
It was crazy, though, because I don't think it ever really exceeded that same popularity in the UK. Everybody always loved Adventure Time more. And then I remember someone telling me it wasn't creative at all because they were like, Adventure Time has a stretchy dog. And what does regular show have, a talking bird? And I was like, but the it's creative in other ways.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're talking about because it was some of that here too. And we were we consider ourselves sort of sister shows. Penn and JG knew each other well, and we did some events together. What I like to say to people, and it's just a matter of personal taste, Adventure Time is your show on acid, and Regular Show is your show on pot. So you know, if you want a stretchy dog, hey, more power to you. It's not the same type of humor. So, and that's, they even addressed that because there was a period here where people were clamoring for some kind of crossover. And both Penn and JG said, well, they're not in the same universe. So how would that even work? You know,
there was a crossover comic that came after Regular Show had ended. It's about the two different universes becoming one, and then they all sizzle out by the end.
That would be one way to get away with it. Yeah, that's smart.
And so in terms of in the UK, it's like, I don't know, I always felt like I was alone in being a Regular Show fan. Oh, another thing was that we had to wait a very long time to actually get episodes in the UK. One thing I said to Matt Price, which completely shocked him, was the fact that the finale, which came out for you guys in January 2017. For us, we had to wait till December 2018.
Why?
For a while, I was thinking like, oh, they must be like really like ripping this episode to pieces to censor it for the UK. But barely anything was changed. They cut out like Antipop saying my God at the end. Yeah. And that was it. I was just like, are they actually going to end the show, or is this going to just go on for decades where they haven't released the finale?
Yeah.
But I'm happy to say, I think it has grown in popularity here now. Like, now that the years have cooled down, and I think people understand a lot more of the more aged up humor.
Yes. Well, it's interesting that you kind of clarified something for me, because I've been invited to and been to New Zealand numerous times for the show, never been to England, and it's a bucket list thing. I'd love to see it before I die, but yeah, I've never been, so hopefully it'll catch on to the degree where somebody will invite us over.
Well, when I spoke to Courtney, I think I'd mentioned the thing on like how like, oh, I want to get like everyone's signatures at some point. She mentioned that, well, if you speak to an organizer of a MCM Comic Con, then like we'd all love to go there and do like a Regular Show reunion.
Absolutely.
But I don't know anyone that yeah. might be in that power, but I'm sure that some sort of petition could be done. I don't know how much traction it would get.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. I know that a lot of people hit me up on socials and say, why don't you come to, I don't know, Shreveport, or why don't you come to, you know, Omaha or whatever. And I always say, well, I'm like a vampire. I have to be invited in. And you know, the fans seem to think that you just go, well, I'm going to go to this convention, this week, and and just show up and maybe they'll let me sit down and sign some autographs. But it doesn't work like that. You have to be a guest at the con. So yeah, when people say, well, would you come to so-and-so? I'm always like, well, I would love to. Just you have to reach out to your con organizer and make the request and see what happens.
Because I also know that it's also like a work thing as well. Another thing that I'm a big fan of outside of regular show is Doctor Who. The biggest Doctor Who convention in the world is Gallifrey One, which takes place in LA. And so I went there this year for that. And I was speaking to some of the people who have been in the show before, and they were saying like, well, yeah, you know, it is a work thing, but like, I'm just hanging out. It's a work thing that I enjoy.
I'm blown away that the biggest Doctor Who convention is where I am and not where you are. That's wild.
Yeah, I loved it. And I can't wait to go back there at some point soon.
Well, if you come back, hit me up and I'll buy you lunch somewhere.
Do you have a favorite episode of regular show?
Yeah, probably so. Not having so much to do with Rigby. I think my favorite is probably Placo Arm Boy, I think it was called, where Rigby beat Skips in arm wrestling. And the reason it's one of my favorites is it's one of the few times you ever get to see Skips really lose his cool. He's such a Zen-centered character. And then when Rigby beats him in arm wrestling, his ego just can't take it. And so, you know, he ends up accidentally killing Rigby. Another subgenre of my favorite episodes. But yeah, I think I really like that because of what Mark got to do with his character. And because, you know, Rigby was such a cheating little dick in it.
And it introduces Death, which I think's great. And it was so sad to hear that Julian Holloway passed away.
He was amazing. And he was one of my favorite people to share a booth with. He was always so funny. And he was basically doing Lemmy Kilmister as Death, you know, and he was just a delightful man and very, very talented. And I was deeply saddened to see that he had passed. Another great Brit that I loved.
I kind of already answered this one, but I'll ask it again. a favorite character, who would you say is your favorite character to play other than Rigby and other than Percy, the creepy doll?
I mean, Jebediah Townhouse was fun. I voiced one of the baby ducks, and it was interesting because it was such a challenge because the voice was, you know, it was just like my head would start to throb. So it was a challenging role and I enjoyed it for that reason. But my favorite characters other than Rigby or Creepy Doll were not mine. They were tended to be other people's. Like, I really love the giant babies, the giant cake. We want cake. Like those guys, David Kay voiced. I really love those guys. And I really like Gary, the David Bowie based. Yeah, he was a really cool character, too.
I mean, obviously, I can see that you're wearing a Rigby T-shirt. Have you got any other sort of regular show memorabilia?
I do. And I, you know, the question is always how long and how much do you hang on to? I've got a couple of the Pop Funkos. And man, I'm afraid to part with it because I was looking for them recently and I saw an ended listing on eBay Australia and somebody had bought one signed by me and paid $500 for it. And that just blew me away. So I'm probably going to have those. I've got a lunchbox and I have one of the old original play sets from Toys R Us, which is like a bubble pack with like Mordecai and Rigby, and they're like on a bicycle or something. So I do have a few things like that. Yeah. And I'll probably hang on to them. And then my kid gets to decide what to do with them after I die.
I'm curious to know as well, how do you feel about people selling things with your signature?
You know, I don't mind. I mean, you know, somebody upstream along there paid me for it. Usually, I've done a few freebies, but yeah, usually I've made money off of it. But and Mark Hamill said once, and it's obviously true. If they have you personalize it, they're going to keep it. If they say just sign it, it's going on eBay. And I'm I'm fine with that. I don't care so much. It's like once you go through the line and buy it, it's yours. You can do whatever you want with it.
So we'll talk about you just as an actor in general now. Okay. What would you say are some of your main inspirations from other media to do what you do?
Well, you know, I'm gonna say I don't know that there were any. I've been acting in one way or another for so long, and it I was so young when I started. I remember that one of the things that really drew me to it was I would be watching TV, you know, and there'd be, or at the movies, and see like the archaeologist doing all the exciting stuff, or the cop doing all the exciting stuff, and it would dawn on me that those people weren't really archaeologists or cops; they were actors, and so that really appealed to me. There's a large number of actors that I admire, you know. So I guess if you could say that I was generally inspired by some of the great character men. I grew up, I was a big OG Star Trek nerd. I love the original Star Trek. And so all of those people I thought were amazing. And I met most of the surviving people now. I got to meet Nichelle Nichols before she passed. And George Takei was in the show. I made the mistake once of talking to William Shatner. So all of that, I think, influenced me as a kid. I don't know that I could put a finger on any one person, because there's genuinely a lot of people that I have a great deal of respect for.
What kind of advice would you like to give for people who want to work as a voice actor?
Don't do it unless you absolutely love it, because it's, people ask me, you know, what's the secret? And I'll say, well, it's you're like asking me to tell you the winning lottery numbers, and I could tell you the numbers that I played, but they won't work for you, you know? So I think if the main draw is that you want everybody to know who you are, or the main draw is that you want to make a bunch of money, you shouldn't do it, because none of that stuff is guaranteed. You know, saying that you want to become famous is like saying that you want to get struck by lightning. You know, you could soak yourself and stand on top of the hill with the lightning rod in your hand, and it still might not happen. You know, meanwhile, somebody walking across the valley, you know, 3 miles away could get hit. You don't have any control over that stuff. So the only control that you have is to do consistently good work that you feel strongly about. And if you do that, I like to say that you have to stand in one place a long time to cast a shadow. If you do that, there's a chance that eventually somebody will pay you for it. It's like being a professional gold miner. You may or may not hit a vein. And when you do hit a vein, the only thing you know about it for sure is that it will play out one day. So it's not a job for somebody who values security. It's not a job for anybody who wants regular hours. You know, I might not do anything all day, and then I might get five auditions in at 5 p.m. that are due the next day. So while my family is in the main house, you know, kicking back, I'm out here in the studio for hours recording. So, I think you can't, you just shouldn't do it unless you love it.
And if you don't want to be a voice actor, don't resort to using AI voices.
We frown on that. As you may know, the video game industry is on strike over here right now. And it is because of that. I shouldn't say the industry, because there's a lot of people, programmers, stuff like that aren't. But the voice actors who work the interactive media agreement are on strike. So and it's about AI. We just want basic protections. You know, don't steal our souls. We don't want our digital replicas to be working while we're on strike. That kind of thing. You know, it's really common sense. But we'd appreciate it if you didn't do that.
We are starting to wrap up, but before I do, I'd just like to ask, is there anything that you've been working on or anything that is coming up that you'd like to promote?
Well, I was, as we spoke about earlier, I was teased in the upcoming Spider-Man game. If in fact I end up in that, please play it and watch me. other than that, anything that I'm working on, I couldn't talk about. So, yeah, just keep an ear out for my voice.
Watch this space.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Where can people find you on social media?
W Salyers is my handle on Instagram and Threads. And I think it's also on Blue Sky. I was WL Salyers on something, but I think it might have been Twitter, and I got rid of that because I always felt like I needed a shower after I was on Twitter. So, yeah, you can find me on Blue Sky. You can find me on Threads. You can find me on Insta. And I also have a Facebook fan page for those seven people who still go to Facebook.
Yeah. Bill, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you, Jay. I had a blast.
Thank you once again to William Salyers for joining us for this interview. Once again, make sure to follow him across social media at W Salyers. All of Bill's links will be in the description. As of right now, this is the most recent interview that we've recorded, but I'm happy to say that there will be more on the way, so watch this space. On that note, if anyone listening worked on Regular Show in any of its forms and are interested in doing an interview, feel free to reach out to us over on Instagram at Regular Show Wiki. We'd love to speak with you. Next week, in celebration of Mark Hamill's birthday, we'll be putting out a compilation of stories about the legend himself, told by our guests over the past 3 months. I hope you enjoy. Until next time, dudes, have a great day. Or night. Or whatever. See ya.